Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them. Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
It is my house. Today is a special day. Every day is special, but this is the official, or let's say for the record, 2000th episode of It's My House. Now, technically, yesterday was the 2000th episode, but one of the episodes that we did like probably 5-6 years ago, or 6 or 7 years ago, one or two, we had somebody on that was speaking about mediation, and I accidentally deleted that show, experimenting here in my early days, and I couldn't get that guy back on. But hopefully I can in the future. But anyway, so yesterday would have been officially the 2000th. Yesterday was de facto 2000th episode. However, today the official, the one we have archived, we've got 2,000 archived episodes of It's My House. So that's today. And today, now this is Slave Entrepreneur Month here on It's My House, Slave Entrepreneur Month. And the goal of this is each day, or practically each day, we give you a person that started off life as a slave and became an entrepreneur, and in some cases, wealthy entrepreneurs. So we started off earlier this week with Mother Priscilla Baltimore, started off life as a slave, and she helped found the town of Brooklyn, Illinois. The next day we had, let's see, who do we have on the next day? You know what, let me look. Because yesterday we had, let me look. I got the records right here. This week we have Junius George Grove on. And he was the Potato King. He became wealthy. He started off life as a slave. And who's the missing link here? Edward R. Yesterday we had on Edwin R. Overall, who became a, he ran an energy company, an energy coal. So that's the three that we featured so far this week. Now, today, our feature is, this person didn't start off life as a slave. He didn't start off life as a slave. And we'll be talking about Chief Alfred Sam, and we're going from Wikipedia, so let's get going with it. Alfred Charles Sam, Sunrise, 1880, when he was born, and it is believed that he passed away or transitioned in the 1830s. No specific date in the 1830s. Alfred Charles Sam was also known as Chief Alfred Sam or Chief Sam, was a Gold Coast-born merchant, pioneer, Pan-Africanist, who during 1913 to 1915, incurred, now this is before Marcus Garvey, encouraged the resettlement of African Americans as part of the Back to Africa movement. All right, now, we'll cover that more in detail later, but all right, let's get more into Chief Sam. Chief Sam was born in in West Akim District of the Gold Coast, which is now known as Ghana, and was educated at a mission school in Kiyibi. He became a trader in rubber and other goods and acquired the title of chief either from an uncle, as he claimed, or as an honor to recognize that he had traveled to the United States and or the United Kingdom. In May 1913, after corresponding with Herbert Macaulay in Nigeria and traveling to the U.S., he began holding large camp-style meetings in Oklahoma and elsewhere, encouraging African-Americans to buy $25 worth of stock in his Akim Trading Company, join a voyage to their ancestral home, settle on the fertile soil that he claimed to have purchased there, reject America, and live a life of freedom. He stated his intentions were to help develop trade between West Africa and the United States by selling commodities such as cocoa, coffee, and mahogany to the U.S. and encouraging Black American farmers and mechanics to settle in Africa and so to develop the economy there. Among his claims were stories of diamonds laying on the grounds after rain, trees that produce bread. And you know what? Now, there is a tree that produces a fruit called breadfruit. I wonder if he was talking about that. And if you ever had breadfruit, now I've had some when I was in Barbados. Breadfruit doesn't look like bread, but when you taste it, it tastes just like a potato, a white potato. Anyway, trees that produce bread, that's what he probably could have meant, breadfruit. And sugar cane as large as stovepipes. Although his scheme was criticized by Black businesses and newspapers and by the authorities, he was cleared of fraud. He was supported by the African Pioneer, a journal of the Back to Africa movement, and persuaded hundreds of families to sell their possessions and invest in his scheme. I don't know if scheme's the right word, but that's what they have here. By early 1914, some 500 Black Americans were prepared to sail to Africa on Sam's ship, the former German steamer Curitiba, one word, I might be butchering that word, which was renamed the SS Liberia and assembled at Galveston, Texas. An initial group of some 60 trained and selected men and women were eventually taken on board and left with Sam in August of 1914. Together with a cargo of lumber, cement, lime, flour, agricultural implements, and household goods, which to establish a settlement, they arrived in Bathworth, now Banjul, Gambia, in December 1914. And both there and in Freetown, Sierra Leone, received considerable publicity. After a long delay in Freetown, while British authorities checked the ship's ownership, they eventually reached their destination of Salt Pond. Let me see where that is today. Okay, that's in Ghana. All right. Where was I? Okay, wait a minute. Okay, they arrived in Bathford and Accra. Salt Pond in January 1915 and were eventually given a warm reception. However, their attempt to settle in Akim failed as local leaders refused to allow Americans to own the necessary land and because of official restrictions, shortages of materials, and malaria, many of the intending settlers suffered physical and financial hardships, were discouraged and felt misled by Sam's claims. Some eventually returned to Oklahoma, while others resettled in cities, in African cities or Liberia. By September 1915, before a second voyage could take place. So he did something that Marcus Garvey didn't do. Marcus Garvey's Black Star Line, they were basically doing the Caribbean. To my knowledge, they didn't do anything that actually ended up in Africa. But Chief Sam, he had at least one ship voyage that did end up in Africa, particularly in Ghana. However, as I just read, some were disappointed. Things didn't go according as planned. Came back, and some adjusted and settled in various cities in Ghana, what we call now Gambia, and probably other parts as well. By September 1915, before the second voyage could take place, Sam's venture collapsed, with most of those still intending to make the voyage, losing their possessions and savings. Sam sold the Liberia and returned to work as a trader. Sources give different accounts of his later life, with one stating that he could have moved to Liberia, while others indicate that he returned to live in the U.S., living the remainder of his life as a coca buyer. It is thought that he died sometime during the 1930s. So he died in obscurity. We don't know whether he passed here in the United States or was he back, as they would call it, home. And this is all before Marcus Garvey. I'm probably anticipating Garvey. I'm speculating knew of him. And got some of the ideas from him, and Sam did in fact purchase a ship, and he did in fact, they did travel from Galveston, Texas, to the continent, but they ran into some difficulties, which that happens, and I will do, well, you can read about him on Wikipedia. There's a picture of him there. Now, I'm going to read another bit from him. Chief Alfred Charles Sam, a shallowy figure in Oklahoma history, inspired the immigration of hundreds of African-American Oklahomans back to Africa in the second decade of the 20th century. Those who completed the first journey to Africa endured physical and financial hardships, with some choosing to return to Oklahoma. Those awaiting to make a second voyage lost most of their savings and possessions when the venture dissolved. Born in the Gold Coast, present-day Ghana, around 1880, Alfred Charles Sam claimed to have inherited the position of local chieftainship from his uncle. After a trip to North America, Sam decided to pursue a career in business entrepreneurship as a trader. In 1913, Chief Sam began preaching to black Oklahomans probably the primary reason why he probably spent quite a bit of time in Oklahoma, that wasn't the only place. is because at that time, Oklahoma had 50 black municipalities. Now, there were more. Those are communities that were incorporated. They had 50 of them at that time. They had more communities that were probably unincorporated. I mentioned one of them yesterday. Blackjack, Oklahoma, is a black community, historic, probably over 100 years old, right next door, literally, to Taft, Oklahoma. Now, you can find information about Taft, Oklahoma. We've had the mayor on Taft, Oklahoma on here 5 or 6 times. But you look online for Taft, Blackjack, Oklahoma, man, I haven't found out anything yet. And I've been there. I've been there more than once. Matter of fact, every time you go to Taft, you may as well say you're going to Blackjack, Oklahoma, too. But they're two different communities. You know, they got their, you know, their differences and whatnot. But so that's probably why Chief Sam spent quite a bit of time in Oklahoma, you know, during his promotion of Back to Africa. Let's see. Now, he urges listeners to buy passage. We read that before. Let me see. Okay, well, they had some hardships. They probably weren't used to the climate. And the word freedom, because Sam, you know, even today they preach about the freedom you can get, but freedom costs. You know, now freedom might be, and you might be free let me give an example in 2022 terms. If you're living in a city right now and you feel that you're living in a city, let's say a D.C., Chicago, New York, San Francisco, name any city that's got over 500,000 people or more, or 100,000 people or more. And you feel there are too many police and the prices of housing and rent is too high and food's expensive and, you know, you're living from hand to mouth, barely that. There are plenty of places where you can go right here in the United States where you can be free. I'll name a couple of places. We can put you in somewhere in Alaska. Alaska is over twice the size of the state of Texas. Now, we can take you to a town out, you know, we're not going to put you in Anchorage or Fairbanks or even Nome, Alaska. There are plenty of places in Alaska where you'll be free, where there are no police. There are no state troopers. There are no FBI. None of it. You'll be free. Now, you're not going to have the conveniences of a hospital. So you're going to have to know something about how to take care of yourself if you get hurt or sick or injured. But you'll be free. Okay. There are no apartment buildings or houses, but there's plenty of forest there. So you're going to have to know something about how to source your own lumber and build your own house. There's no Whole Foods where I'll drop you off at in Alaska. So, but there's plenty of wild game and vegetation that you can, I mean, nature is a grocery store. You'll be free. You ain't got to worry about the man no more. But free, it does cost. You're going to have to pick up some life skills that you probably don't have. Now, if you don't like Alaska, let's go to the East Coast. I'll take you to the upper part of the state of Maine. You'll be free. But just like Alaska, you're going to have some skills. because the comfort and the conveniences of a place like a Seattle or Sacramento or Dallas, they're not there. But you'll be free, because they're going to have a place like that all throughout the United States. All right. So I imagine a lot of people that were in Oklahoma, that they, you know, they got pumped up on the idea of, you know, going back to Africa, and they're going to have their freedom, and they ain't got to worry about white folks. They ain't got to worry about lynching. They don't have to worry about the Klan. Chief Sam was right. Because where they were, there were no white folks. There was no Klan. There also was no comfort and no conveniences. Some of those people made their way back to Oklahoma. When you talk about freedom and leaving whatever place that you're at, remember, free cost. You're going to either have to pick up some new life skills or something. But free does cost. It's got a price tag to it, some kind of way. Anyway, so that was a little blurb on Chief Alfred Charles Sam. I would say, you know what? Although his venture went bust, I'm gonna say he did have success by organizing people, buying a ship, and making it over to Africa for that first visit, a voyage. Granted, some people felt misled. Okay. Because I don't think their version of freedom was probably different from his version of freedom. Because remember now, Chief Sam was born and raised in what we now call Ghana. They called it the Gold Coast back then. So when he was speaking about freedom, and I'm just guessing here, he was thinking, well, you know, there is no KKK in the Gold Coast at that time. You know, there's no white people lynching other black people in this part of Africa at that time. Let's call it a cultural difference. So Chief Sam had a different cultural point of view than the people who grew up in the United States, in Oklahoma or the South, in the United States. And, was back to Africa fever was kind of rampant back then. So you had a lot of people that, you know, wanted to go back to Africa. And he came to Oklahoma, which, I mean, between that and Texas, those were the two go-to states. If you wanted to preach to black folks that wanted to go back to Africa, then it would actually do it. So he made, I'm sure there were mixed emotions some felt misled, in part due to cultural differences. They probably didn't see it that way, but I'm just guessing. Some, probably died. You know, their body couldn't adjust to the climate, the food, the soil, what have you. Some say, you know what, I'm here. Let me make the best of it. And they went to other towns. Because now, by the time they made it over here, there, prior to Chief Sam, which was number four, he was the fourth one to do a back to Africa trip and actually make it to the shores of Africa. Marcus Garvey just did the West Indies. Yeah, Paul Cuffey and his crew in colonial times that helps establish Sierra Leone. Then you had the Liberian trip. Then you had the Republic of Africa. Excuse me, The Republic of Maryland. The Republic of Maryland, okay. Then you had Chief Sam. Anyway, I just got a phone ring on the hotline. Robin, you there?
Yes, I'm here. So I'm glad that you mentioned freedom is not necessarily free. And then you
right.
also made a distinction of free, what freedom is for one person is different for somebody else.
Exactly.
Okay? So, and then over where the fellow was, there was not lynching from white people and
right.
KKK, but
right.
they were in danger, weaker and less powerful tribes lower on the food chain and royalty
right. mm-hmm.
were captured by their own other nationalists from different
right.
tribes.
That's true.
Okay? So freedom, it's freedom from something. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the fight for freedom is always an escape for something. And then also, it costs something. Even things that are not free cost something.
They cost something.
In the beginning, whether it's free or not free, somebody in the beginning has to give some, let's say, business, for example. That business owner has to give up money. He's got to get a license. He might have to get a place to have
mm-hmm.
the business. He might have to buy supplies, all of that, before he
right.
can even sell anything.
Right.
So in
let's
freedom,
not forget time.
To same thing. Somebody at the beginning has to give up something.
Right.
Whether it's paid or free. Somebody has to give up something in the beginning to generate it, to start it all off. Does that make
right.
sense to you?
It does.
Yes. Yep, so that's what I wanted to say. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
because now, Chief Sam was, I haven't found a whole lot written about him, but, you know, it probably was some gripers and complainers when they got over there. Because although they were free from the KKK and they were free from lynching of white people, one point that you did bring up, and this is what happened with the Republic of Maryland, which was another
yeah.
back to Africa group of people from the United States, is when they got over to Africa, people with the Republic of Maryland people, and I'm sure this happened with the Chief Sam people too, a lot of the indigenous tribes,
yep.
They didn't like them. I mean, cultural differences, just cultural differences alone. So with
yeah.
the Republic of Maryland, they were attacked. You know,
yeah.
and they thought they can do, some of them thought, well, you know what, we're over here, then we can enslave. No, that didn't wash well. So the Republic of Maryland, they had to, since they didn't have an ample military, and I'm sure Chief Sam's people didn't have a military at all, but the Republic of Maryland people, they had to get the help of Liberia. And Liberia, who had a military, and Liberia said, okay, we'll help you and the diplomat for you, but you have to become a part of, because the Republic of Maryland was its own recognized state. Okay. The Republic of Maryland said, no, you got to annex you into us. You become a part of Liberia, and then we'll help you out, militarily as well as diplomat-wise. So today, the Republic of Maryland, you can look this up online, fact-check me, it exists, but it exists as Maryland County, Liberia. So they went from the state, and there's a video on YouTube of that too. But that's where the Republic of Maryland exists today. And then Chief Sam, they came in fourth behind all that, and nobody would sell them any land. So, they were free. They were free from the white man. They were free from the KKK. But I'm saying, you know, one of the things that they discovered.
Sometimes we just trade one set of circumstances for another. But
right.
But are we indeed free?
And you know what? A lot of these people, and I don't know everybody, but I'm sure, well, once again, they had their physical liberty. But they had to adjust to a climate that they probably weren't used to. Okay. Number two, you know, food, you know, how to grow food there. They didn't know any of the indigenous languages. And if you don't know the indigenous languages, you know, you can't trade.
Wait a minute. The languages, the dialects, the cultures, and the diet, the food. So watch this. People born and raised on one hemisphere, their whole are in one region. They are used to, their bodies are used to certain type, their blood types are used to certain type thing.
Right.
And if you take that person and take them out of that hemisphere, put them in another hemisphere, their bodies don't adapt like that.
Right.
You're going to have to introduce them to food. You're going to have to teach them. You're going to have to train them. They almost need to go through a dietitian. Because.
And I don't think Chief Sam talked about that aspect of it.
You take these people completely out of their element and put them in another one, and you expect for them to be accepted, and you expect for them to know how to function. That's like taking a kindergartner and putting them in graduate school.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Yep.
You're absolutely right.
When you are setting up a location that's going to encompass people, right?
Mm-hmm.
A community, a neighborhood, a city, whatever, a colony, you've got to bear the full responsibility for these people, for their livelihood, for their spirituality, for their politics, for their education, for their safety, for their utilities, for their housing. I mean, if you're going to take that on, you've got to be responsible for all of that.
Now, hold it. Are you saying that Chief Sam should have been responsible for all that? Because he was preaching freedom.
He was preaching freedom, but what else did Chief Sam do? Didn't I hear you say that he set up people?
Oh, he promoted the
people.
Hell out of – he said after the rain, you can walk on the beach and there are diamonds.
Okay, and again – when you are doing that, you bear a fucking responsibility. You can't just redirect people to out in the middle of the water nowhere. You can't do that. If I'm going to send you somewhere and I'm going to say, hey, L.A., you need to go over here, and over here they got everything you need. You're trusting me. And then you get over there, and they don't have everything that you need, but I sent you there. You understand? And I'm promoting it. I'm supporting it, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to bear that responsibility for sending you out there. And if I'm going to send you to a place, then I need to make sure that that's going to serve you whole. Does that make sense? I've got that responsibility. Otherwise, I don't need to be reporting nothing. Does that make sense to you?
Well, now, let me come at it from this way.
Okay.
Because we're talking about, I understand what you're saying. But
yeah.
Here's the point of view I'm looking at. All right, he's promoting, and once again, let's add in the cultural differences aspect to it. Freedom. Now, we both agree that freedom costs. So, Sam, more than likely, you don't have to worry about the white man. You don't have to worry about the white man lynching you. They're probably, you know, there are diamonds over there. You're free to get as many diamonds as you want. Now that doesn't mean you can just pick them up randomly. You might have to diamonds, and I don't know much. I don't know anything about that, but I know you got to diamond mines. You got to go deep into the earth.
Okay? Yeah.
Let's go to the Garden of Eden allegory. Okay. The way I'm looking at the Garden of Eden allegory with Adam and Eve, we're in the Garden of Eden is paradise. Okay? Now, it's up to us to make it into, to make it as comfortable as we would want it to be. So, when they made it over to Africa, the Gold Coast, or what they call Gambia now, okay, here it is. There, you're free from the police. You're free from white people. You're free from lynching. However, to make it comfortable, you're going to have to clear some land, and some of them might not have had that skill set. There was no general store. There was no general store that they had somewhere in Oklahoma, Taft, Oklahoma, someplace like that. Okay. Some things, you know, they didn't even, all right. Now, one of the things that I see this on a lot of YouTube videos here in 2022, they think that some black Americans, actually many black Americans, not all, think just because you have the same skin color, it's black is black all the way around the world, and black folks are not a monolith. They're cultural differences, and then their personality differences. So a lot of them went over there and probably thought, man, it's going to be nothing but black folks over here. But the black people, or what we call black people over in Africa, they're tribal. They don't think in terms or black and white. They think in terms of this tribe, the Robin tribe, the L.A. tribe, the Pianki tribe, the Beasley tribe,
and
whatever.
They're not free. And people in the tribes are not free. So guess what? If you go over there and you don't belong to a tribe, you're not free either. You're a renegade, and you're not going to be accepted, fool.
And they didn't think that when they made that trip over. I'm just speculating.
They didn't tell them that when they're promoting this place for you to go over there. No white people know this, know that. You bear the responsibility for sending those people over there.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think Chief Sam had been in the American culture long enough to pick up the cultural difference between the United States as well as where he came from in Africa?
No, he didn't.
You have to be over here a little bit, Prince.
No, he didn't.
Florida.
He didn't stand
now
a chance because the United States was being developed and built, and actually you had a bunch of scavengers and scalawags that were running abreast of this law. They were scofflaws. That were sent over here to build this great country. So Chief didn't stand a chance because he's going up against a bunch of psychopaths. Do you understand? And
right.
They didn't have no cultural nothing in mind. They were just trying to position themselves for power and money.
Right. And then, you know, their cultural nuance, like, for instance, I haven't been to where you live at, the state of Washington, but I'm sure that, all right, you're in Everett, Washington, and you got people in Seattle, Washington. I'm pretty sure that people in Everett, Washington can tell, you know what, this person's from Seattle. People from Seattle can tell this person's from, just like D.C., Baltimore. Baltimore, Maryland is only like 45-minute drive from D.C.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between D.C., particularly, actually white folks too, there's a difference between, you can just look at them and there's a difference. You can tell who's from where. 45 minutes difference. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But the Baltimore, I'm not going to say the word in slang ways, but you can tell the difference. So I don't think Sam was over here long enough to pick up those cultural differences because, now, I agree with you 100% on this case. It would have been wise of him to say, look, okay, this is what freedom means there, and this is what freedom means here, and here are some of the adjustments you're going to have to make. And then some people had that, you know what, I don't want to go over there and, because we're talking about someplace, number one, they couldn't even buy any land.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Sam even anticipated that. I don't think he factored in the cultural differences.
How could he have known?
And now a lot of people are just not pioneers.
How could he have known that you go over there and you observe, wow, there's not slavery, blacks don't have to do this, and blah, blah, blah. So how could he have known if he goes to a whole nother country after that and he's telling people, hey, he's not even a native of either one, right? But he's telling people, hey, you take your butt over there. Now, and then they get over there and find that they can't buy land, they can't do this and that. How could he have known that they couldn't buy land? How would he have known that? Unless he tried to buy land.
Yeah.
So
well, he tried to buy it after the fact.
What I'm saying is that you can't just go visit a place and look at a place and then go back to another place and then tell everybody about that place.
Sounds like Sam should have had
because you have
some partners and purchased
and
land.
And when I'm saying live there, I'm saying you try to buy land, you're registered to vote, you're paying taxes, all of that, because now you're in a position to give advisement to somebody else coming to your country. And then you might still not be in a position to advise somebody else of your race coming to your country because you don't know.
Right, and back when he was preaching this preaching, they had considerably less. Well, you know what? Let me open up the lines to somebody who's been in or over in that neck of the woods. Area code 314, your mic is open.
Resident expert.
Hey, what's going on? Robin, it is so great to hear you.
Hi, how are you?
And I'll tell you, you sound better than bacon and eggs cooking in this skillet.
Happy New Year.
Yes, sir.
Happy New Year.
LA, you know, and Robin hit on some very good points, too. But this Back to Africa move is basically been carried by what you would call black nationalists.
Uh-huh.
because in general, black organizations like the NAACP and others was totally against it. Some politicians was totally against it. Some activists was against it. And that's why Cummings never went no place. But it's always like that. There's those who do and those who don't.
Right.
But what you see today is a lot of people who support those things, but they won't do them themselves. Now, there have been some groups that have and been successful, like the Hebrew group that was following Ben Amin out of Chicago early, about 3 or 4 decades ago. But you know, a key thing that you hit upon, even in the late 1700s, early 1800s, when you had groups that did go back, after a period of time, they were down there all dead because of what Robin said.
Right.
The acronyms of them had been basically bred out of them because they had been away from that environment, and to go back would prove to be fatal because of the bacteria, diseases, and so on and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So even in modern times, when you have had tribal groups that have said for black Americans and also Africans in the diaspora, I think it was after the Africans in the diaspora. When you say African in the diaspora, that means African people who have came to the West and went to school, obtained jobs, and have settled there. They are highly skilled. And those governments want them to come back and use those skills to further develop their nation.
Yep.
Even the African Union years ago was contemplating on what was called a fifth region. They identified 4 regions on the African continent. Then they identified what could be the fifth region, that being the Caribbean, and Africans in other countries like Britain, of course, the United States, so on, so on, so on. Well, you had some black nationalists here in the United States took that to mean them. Okay. And they was going through the process of holding plebiscites to vote people representing United States. They had these plebiscites in some of your major cities like New York and, you know, Philadelphia and so forth. And I was even looking at that. A friend of mine, a leader of the National Black United Front at the time, Conrad Worrell, said, leave that alone. That ain't for real. But eventually it was not for real. You had some ambitious blacks here in America that wanted to try to push it forward. And it didn't go no place. Then to come to find out, I used to try to contact people with the AU, have to get up early in the morning because at that time they was headquartered in Ethiopia, in Addis Ababa. And I was trying to reach, and I did reach a guy by the name of Jimmy. I think his last name was Adiz, but I'm not sure, but I do have it. And I asked him, I say, this African diaspora, are you referring to black American? Well, after some research with the attorneys and so forth, they said, no, you're not referring to black Americans. Africans in the diaspora are Africans who are learning and living abroad that they consider as being that. So there you have it. You know, it's a funny thing. When some of the people went back to Liberia, Liberians, indigenous people, fought them, looked at them as invaders. And as I said before, there have been some, one of those, for instance, you had the Fianca Project in Ghana, there in the Volta region, and it offered like 35,000 acres of land. And I do know of at least 3 blacks that did go there and build some homes. but three homes built in Compton is on 35,000 acres.
That's a lot of
land. It's basically not what it is. Yeah, basically not Zimbabwe, this is Ghana. Basically now what they're doing, unless they do it anybody, is try to encourage people to come and develop. They would offer them land to develop. You don't never own the land. Never do you own land.
So they give them what, like 99-year leases?
They give 99-year leases to indigenous people or those that's in the diaspora. Now, if you're a foreigner, like you would be considered as you're a black American, it's 50 years. And after the 50 years, if those tribal regions don't like what you have done, they take the land back.
So you know what I don't like about that? If you develop it, and it, you know, then they don't have to renew after that 50 years. So they take back developed land.
Well, yeah, they allow you to take your buildings if you want to take them back to wherever you came from.
but more than likely that's not going to happen. Unless you got trailers up there.
You don't own no land. Now, unless it's in the metropolitan area, like, you know, downtown that you would consider, that would be different. But see, each of those, like Ghana has 10 regions. Nigeria has 35 regions. And each one of those regions have a chief. And those chiefs, which are chosen through the process, they basically tell you what you can do and what you can't do.
Yep.
And that's independent of the national government, because the national government don't want to be having any problems with the locals. So, anyway.
Well, that would be interesting. So, now, in order to get, you're not going to own any land. Now, how do you know, I mean, is there anything in writing that you know of that, what happens between the make thing, what protects you with the local chief? Because somebody could come in and say, well, you know,
well, you can't take them to court.
We want our cut, too.
Well, first of all, you can take matters like that to court.
Okay.
And when you take possession of land, you do register it with a land commissioner.
All right.
And like in Ghana, there's something called what they call stool, S-T-O-O-L, because the soul of Ghana is the golden stool, and its historical content, whether mythical or for real. So each area is a stew. You have the Awey stew, you have the Ashanti stew, you have the Ga stew, you have the Fanti stew. So each area has its own stew. So that stew is sort of like the governing entity, the constitution, as you want to say, of that particular area. And that's why they call it stew land. Fianca was stew land. Fianca means those who left without saying goodbye, or those who left in the fire. So that stew land that was granted and agreed upon by the elders of that area. That area being in the Volta region, Upper Volta, and, you know, I think the home of it is Acapulco, but I'm not sure. My wife is Awey. She's from the Volta region.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of history there. And I'd like to find some more information about this guy, Chief Sam. I haven't found a whole lot about him.
In Liberia, they made available like one on the river G-E-E. I understand that was available 750 square miles. It's bigger than states. That thing goes 750 miles in one direction, turn right, 750 miles in that direction, turn right, 750 miles in that direction, turn right, 750 rounds take you back where you began. And it has all sorts of resources, including fresh water. But who's going to go there? See, blacks talk about these opportunities, about separating. Separating, you could call them treasonous, right? That's what they call the states that separate during the Civil
War.
That's
right. So they better be careful when they talk all that mess.
Yeah, you're right. And damn sure, it's only, like we said, it's only a few people that's talking that stuff. But heck, look at all the opportunities that's here. Like you talk about in Oklahoma. Now, Oklahoma, that's Indian land. And you have to be, I don't know how in the heck they've gotten away with so much rhetoric now, especially like in Wall Street, in Greenwood, and it was really Greenwood and Greenwood and Archer. It was Greenwood and First National was really the name of the street. I think it came to be known as Archer later on. But that's Indian territory. You got Wagner County to the east of what you call Tulsa. That's Cherokee.
I've been there. Tallahassee. Part of that Tallahassee is in Wagner County.
Yeah, Wagner County is where Sarah Rechner, 160 acres, was.
Also, I want to say really quick, when people talk about seceding or separating, well, guess what, people? You have to have a location or locale or region or something built up or established to separate to or secede. You understand? Other than that, you're just talking out the side of your mouth.
You know another thing too, Robin. You can't take your kids with you, especially if they're underage, because your kids was born United States citizen.
And you got them a Social Security card.
Yeah, you know, I've known people. I knew a lady from Ghana, St. Louis. She was married to an African American. Mm-hmm. And they had a daughter. She's an Ashanti. And she tried to take her daughter back to Ghana with her, and her husband wouldn't let her because she was an American citizen, and she was not of age to make this decision herself. That's the same thing with renouncing your citizenship. I know some people who are basically stateless. They renounce the U.S. citizen, like Robin said, you ain't got no place to go beforehand. Well, you out there in limbo.
Question, baby's not automatically given dual citizenship?
No. Well, that's a good question, but I don't think so because
you can practically almost do anything you want to do, I imagine.
Probably not. Back in 1914?
It was less restrictive as it is now.
They had visas during that time because during the Ethiopian and Italian wars, you had blacks that wanted to leave here to go fight for Ethiopia, and I think they even had a problem. You had what's his name, Hubert Julian, and you had another guy that went to formation Ethiopia Air Force. I think they was allowed to do it, but you know, people have to be careful when they. You know, another thing, if you make attempts to become a citizen of another country, the State Department can denounce your citizenship here in the States. Mm. Something to that effect. In other words, they don't recognize, and for a simple reason, suppose you're a citizen of the country that the United States go to war with. Well, then they're going to have to keep careful eye on you because you may want to do some something on behalf of the country that they're fighting while you're here in the States. You know, you could, like that Form 8 and the Fifth Column.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the issues with the Japanese during their internment. Here you are at war with the Japanese imperialist army. And what was that guy's name that was the leader of Japan? I can't think of his name. But you pledge allegiance to him, and you're here in the United States, so they're going to have to keep an eye on you. The same way the FBI kept an eye on the communists, American United States communists, American communists.
Yeah,
that's one reason they kept an eye on.
Drives me crazy, because the Japanese, particularly here in Tacoma and Seattle, that they, when they bombed Pearl Harbor, they went and Chinese and Japanese, and they put them in Seattle and Tacoma, and they put them in jail in prisoners of war.
Internment camp, yeah.
Internment camp. And these people were business owners, property owners, and they were taxpayers, not communists.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, I don't even, if they did vote, you know, but I don't even think they voted. You know what I'm saying? And some of them were veterans that had purchased their property with VA loans and stuff.
Well, that's why come they got reparations, because they didn't go through the process that's spelled out in the Constitution on the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
No, it's the 5th Amendment. They didn't go through due process before they took caused them to lose their property. So
yep.
During Reagan's administration.
My thing is that if those same people had gotten together and formed a colony, this fifth colony, they would have been in trouble and tried for treason. But the United States goes and they gather them and put them in an internment camp, basically creating another colony, if you will. I'm just saying.
Well, I don't think I think that it was done out of the best reasons that it could be done at that time.
Yeah.
Here you find the country who just bombed Pearl Harbor, and actually they could have came on to the West Coast and invaded, except that one of its leaders said that we can't do that because behind every blade of grass in the U.S. there's a gun. Because Americans were well armed.
Yep.
One of the main reasons why come they chose to use the atomic bomb, because if they had to invade Japan, then you would have been fighting people in the street, which would have further led to more deaths, loss and casualties. So they bombed them into submission.
Wow.
That was the Emperor of Japan that I was trying to refer to. Emperor of Japan, just like the Queen of England. Emperor of Japan, the Queen of England, just like in Ghana, you got the Ashanti, you got the King of the Ashanti, who is Osei Tutu. So those titles of nobility still exist around the world, especially in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those African countries have offered land as an economic reason for African America. What they really are doing is trying to get people who have skills to further develop their systems, whether it's agriculture, whether it's electricity or water and so on, beyond where it is. And they say, well, you come, you can have this land, so on, but you don't own it. You have it at your disposal. And Zimbabwe done it with farmers. They told American black farmers, you can have as much land as you want, come develop. Kenya said it to Americans in one project. As I said before, Ghana, Liberia has said it. Senegal, said it to Haitians during the Haitian earthquake. Come back, you can settle here. So from time to time you hear that, but people don't take it upon themselves to do it for the simple reason out of the United States. Even your poorest of the poor is better off here in the U.S. than if you were someplace else.
Are so they impress upon you to believe.
Well, see, here's the thing. When those people got over there in Liberia, they was exposed. And even today, you're exposed to things that you ain't exposed here.
Yeah.
You're exposed to pathogens. You're exposed to bacteria because of the lack of sewage. Your sewage is wide open. They trenches. Coming out of the colonial period.
Viruses and bacteria everywhere, and then your immune system, plus they remove you from one hemisphere to the other, and your diet is not set up for that, so your immune system is completely unarmed. It's completely compromised. And you get over there, and you get sick. Oh, my goodness. Forget about it.
Even if you go on to Nigeria, West Africa, or if you're going up in the northeast corner of Egypt, you try to eat the local food, it's going to make you sick.
Yeah.
You're going to have extended period of diarrhea. Then you got the issue with malaria.
Yep.
And you got the issue with certain parasites.
Yeah.
I know some people take bottles of water out of the Nile River, which is clear as bottled water you buy in the store. But within that water, you got bacteria. I know some people, by mistake, drunk water out of the bottled water they collected from the Nile. They just grabbed a bottle of water. They didn't take the label off of it.
Yeah.
You know, I even done that, but I'm still here. But I know the parasites, if you put your feet in the river, like some people like to put their feet in the water, parasites will get on you. And you know, they can cause some problems.
Yeah, they'll burrow in your skin, get in your bloodstream. I mean, it's just all kinds of bug bites, the same thing. You can get parasites, malaria.
You can't have sex with people in other parts of the world.
Definitely not.
Because whether it occurs genitalia or whether just body contacts and sweat.
Yep.
That is going to be spread. Kissing, that's the worst.
You better not. People forget about mononucleosis.
Yeah. I
haven't heard that term in a while, disease in a while.
Yeah, but it's spread common by kissing. That's why whenever I meet somebody, even if I get in a relationship with them, I'm not quick about kissing. And I ain't dated in years, y'all. But I'm just saying, don't come putting your lippies on my face.
Give them that Obama bump.
When we used to be on international flights coming back into the U.S.,
yeah.
And just by the time they got ready to land, the stewardesses would go up and down the aisles of the plane and release an aerosol content at the vents. And basically what they was doing was sanitizing us on the plane.
And
when you come through U.S. Customs.
And making a barrier to keep them safe, too, from you.
Yeah. When you come back through U.S. Customs. Yeah, when you come back to U.S. Customs through the airport, they give you a form you fill out on the plane. It's usually yellow and white if you're U.S. I'm sorry, blue and white if you're U.S. citizen. And if you're an immigrant, it's a different color. I think it's brown and white. And some of the questions they ask you, are you carrying any food? Are you carrying any plants or fruits?
Yeah.
And also, have you been around animals?
Yeah.
Now, if you're carrying any foods, they take it. Now,
yeah.
Africans that would come here would bring their food because they didn't trust the food in America. Their luggage in bags used to be full of food. You can smell it, especially one food that was called stockfish. That's some of the stinkiest stuff you ever want to smell. Called stockfish.
Oh, okay.
There's another word for it. So you can smell that in the luggage. And I think they was allowed to bring it in because they wasn't as strict. I think they are now. Hey, I tried to come through with some avocado.
They tighten up on a lot of stuff.
I tried to come through with some avocado. They took my avocado. Now, if you've been around animals, they may take you in the back room, strip your clothes off and wash them or spray you. Well, basically, it's fumigation. They will fumigate you.
Yeah.
Because the possibility of that spreading into the husbandry industry in the United States can be devastating.
And whatever other parasites that they might have that are dangerous to you, bloodborne. Yep.
Just like when the Haitians was down on the border. And it showed that the custom agent on horseback trying to stop the one Haitian. Well, he had just went back over to Mexico to buy some food. And you can see he had in his hand bags and containers. Well, you can't do that. You can't bring foreign foods, substances, to American shores.
Wow. Yeah, even up in here in Washington State, we can't carry apple and berries from one county to another. Can't do it.
Yeah. An
apple?
Yeah,
what kind of apples do they grow up in Washington State?
All of them. Red, golden delicious, Granny Smith.
Yeah, I like Granny Greens, Granny Smith.
So thus is the story on that particular topic.
Uh-huh.
If people want to leave, they can go. Ain't nobody home, but you got some idiots that want to take everybody with them.
Well, a lot of people come back from those trips. And Africa didn't turn out. It wasn't what they expected.
Then you got to be vaccinated. Because malaria... Ain't no joke.
Okay, so you're a very good example of what I'm saying. If you're going to be telling people about some other place, then you bear some responsibility, and you need to be telling them everything that you know about that place, especially if you're going to promoting them to go over there, because you bear some responsibility for those people when they get there. Yes, you do. Just saying.
And you know the thing with malaria, when that mosquito put that parasite in you, okay, he may do it in August. You come back to the States, malaria may not flare up until December in you.
Yep.
All right, you got a hell of a fever and all that stuff. You go to the hospital. Hospitals don't know what the hell to look for. They didn't know you went to Africa in August.
Yeah.
So they treat you for stuff that you don't have. Why, in the meantime, times are wasting, and malaria is doing its thing. It can kill you. The malaria that you contracted in Africa can kill you in the United States in December if the hospital don't know what the heck they looking at. I'm going to give you an example of reason. Asa Hiller, well known amongst black nationals, out of Texas, out of Hiller, Texas, a town named after his family because he was in education. He went to Ghana, contracted malaria. Then he went to Egypt. And he came down, and he killed him in Egypt. And he had been going to Ghana for a long time. But finally, this one time, it got it. Now, I never did take them shots neither. Still don't take those shots. And I had one slight bout of malaria that was over that next morning. It wasn't a strong case, but it was a light case. Where I had, you know, I went through the process of sweating like heck and a fever. So I don't know. I guess I'm just lucky to have been immune to a lot of things because of going over in them countries. Getting to the point where I can, and I have been sick from eating the local food because I eat some fish, and that gave me some diarrhea. I ain't never been incapacitated with sickness, but, you know, I have had some bouts of this and bouts of that. Even in Egypt. Stay in those first-class five-star hotels because they have a Western diet, prepared food and everything. In Egypt, they don't pasteurize the milk. So you can't have milk in your coffee, okay?
And
you can't have the
and
cheese.
And you also watch this. You get packaged beverages, but watch this. They take the packaged beverages and they'll put them on ice that's not safe. So you have to wipe off the water or wash it off those containers before you drink out of them.
Absolutely. When it comes to salads, you can't eat the salads because they wash the salads, the lettuce in it, with local water.
Yeah.
So your safe bet is what you can't eat the cheeses. Your safe bet is stuff that's been brought up to a high temperature to prepare it. Like fried eggs or, you know, something that, them little sausages, the breakfast sausages, you can't eat them. Butter, you can't eat that. Can't butter your toast.
And what about refrigeration? There's a lot of non-refrigeration occurs there, too. Am I correct?
Well, they got the, in the cities and that they have refrigeration, but when you get out in the countryside, then you just at the mercy.
Okay.
You got to have bacteria soap that's like your Lifebuoy and your Dial and stuff is here. So it's just precautions that you have to take. And you can't wear, in the Muslim countries, you can't be wearing T-shirts that got Jesus all on it. That's like a bullseye. And
your
women can't
be
dressing inappropriate. You can't be wearing no Daisy Duke shorts. That's like a bullseye, too. And I'm literally telling you the truth.
Arrested.
You can get killed. You don't even get a chance to be arrested. You get killed.
Man, that's very conservative over there, then.
Wow. Yep. Certain body motions, like crossing your left leg and having your left foot facing somebody, that's offensive.
Well, remind me not to go to an Islamic country.
Well, when you're in the cities, things are a little bit cooler, but if you start getting out into the countryside, going into these areas, it's different. Jews aren't safe in those countries, in many places. When you travel on, you're going to take most of your travel is done on tour buses, like in Egypt. Well, if you travel from one town to the other, it has to be escorted by tourist police who are heavily armed. Because once they get your butt out there in the desert, anybody can rob and stop the bus and come on there and rob everybody.
Pirates.
Well, pirates on the sea,
You know?
So you get the mercy. you're at the mercy of the locals, even when we're in Ethiopia. And when you go south, you got to fly because of the mountainous terrain. It's impassable by vehicles. Unless, you know, you just take too long.
Well,
so when you're amongst those tribes, when you're amongst those tribes, you're at their mercy.
I have a question, a quick question. Is highway robbery still existing in the United States?
Yeah, it exists in Barbados, I know that.
Yeah, it's called carjacking.
Thank you.
Yeah, here in the U.S. it's called carjacking.
Yeah, it's called carjacking.
They are my niece and her mother got carjacked by gunpoint 2 months ago.
Oh, were the, because you got 12-year-olds in some cases.
That's right.
Attempting to carjack now.
In St. Louis, you had an 11-year-old and his mama carjacked a person. 11-year-old in the back seat. And they talked the guy into taking them some places. He started pulling off. The 11-year-old pulled out a gun and smacked him upside the head with it.
He needs
mama,
a real good.
Mama put the car in park. Open the driver's door, kick the guy out of his own damn car.
Raising Canaan.
Yeah, okay. That right there, I'm sorry, that's a dope deal gone wrong, too. Okay? I'm sure
I've known people to be killed like
that. Huh?
I got a friend that I talked to. His son got killed in a carjacking.
Yeah.
He carjacked killed the Uber drivers. All kind of stuff, man. These people, America is dangerous in these cities.
And Uber drivers are trafficking people and committing assaults and murders.
Hold it, the drivers or people who are calling Uber?
The driver, both the two, it's a two-way street. Like he's saying, it's not safe out there. And me, myself, I wish a nigga would. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm crazy. Never mind me. I'm just going there.
Hell, I was reading what some woman, a grown-ass woman was, damn near trafficking.
Yep.
All kind of stuff. When you used to be in the bars, a woman would come in with a real short skirt and a lot of cleavage showing. Say, my car is stuck. Can somebody come help me?
Yeah.
They get down there and get robbed. I say, go ahead, baby. I'll call AAA.
Okay. Situation that you described, that mother and that boy, they got that man in a situation like that. Okay? Hey, man, you know, blah, blah, blah. Let's drop my son off, and then we can go and get this, and then we can go and do this. Okay? And then when the son got in the back seat, he popped him, and they put him out of his own car. But that's
smacked
that,
him
they
upside
was
the head with a pistol.
Pow! Yeah, but he got in the car with them because the woman says, "Hey, we're gonna go down here, and I'm gonna give you a little bit of this, but we gotta drop my son off first." And that's
well, I can imagine what happened when the kid hit him upside the head at the stoplight or wherever. He turned around, seen the gun. About that time, the mother sitting there in the passenger seat told him to get the hell out the car.
Yeah.
And she reached over and took the keys. She took the keys out the ignition.
Yeah.
So he couldn't take the keys and get out the car. He
and
had to get out the car with what he had on.
He going to get out that car.
Yeah. Yeah, with that gun behind you.
Yeah. I wish the nigga would. And I didn't have a
couple like them guys take
too.
Them girls to the hotel.
Yeah.
Take them girls to the hotel and while they in there taking a shower, that girl grab up all his clothes and shoes and run on out. And he in there naked.
That's low. Hopefully he can call a friend that lives nearby. And a Walmart credit card. Mm.
It's sad though because they're dumb and they stick around and then they don't think that they're gonna get seen again. Silly.
Well,
silly
the thing is that stuff go on, people don't realize it. And people fall for that crap and they get set up. I tell you something else they used to get people with them TVs. Man, we just stole this TV and we'll sell it to you for, I know where you can get one. So you drive over to this apartment. They go upstairs and get a box, bring it down, you give them the money. You get home, open the box, they shit in it, but some rocks, an old TV.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that.
Yeah.
They run that scam in New York, at least they used to. They probably still do.
Wow. Say that again.
Somebody meet you on the street and ask you, you want to get a TV. They take you to a location. They run up in the apartment, come back down with a box, with a brand new TV box. But when you get home and open it up, ain't nothing in there. Either old TV ain't worth nothing.
Or some bricks.
You go back to the apartment, ain't nobody there.
Ooh. Why didn't you open the box before? Then you never mind.
Well, see, they would have opened the box,
nothing,
and it would have been the case of the TV.
Yeah.
I wouldn't buy nothing from nobody. Just like last year, I was in the shopping center, and somebody I hadn't seen this in years, had a little grocery cart, not the ones you got in the store, but, you know, ones you buy, you know, metal, the one ones. Anyway, they were selling meat. They were selling meat during the summertime. I said, no, not interested. You know they just probably stole it.
Yeah. Hell, in Nigeria, you can get any kind of meat, including the human.
Thanks, but no thanks.
You hear that, Robin?
Yeah.
You can get human meat.
Now, hold it now. That's not illegal over there, cannibalism.
I went ahead and followed you.
Oh, that's got to be on the
when
black
you get
market.
Out in them areas, when you get out in them areas, the law is the people. The police don't even go in them areas.
And the law is for the lawless, but when you're out there so far away from the law, in the case of Alaska, there's not no jurisdiction. It's just one officer for every 1,000 miles. You understand? And so,
mm-hmm.
So the law being for the lawless, and then the farther the way that they are away from the law, there's no accountability, so people will do what they want in the balance of power.
Yeah, you take somebody out there and leave, the wolves will eat them.
Yeah, but
yep.
They'll be free.
No, not necessarily. Because you can be free of what? But that doesn't necessarily mean.
Yeah, it's all
you
relative
might be
to what.
Free of this, you might be free of that. But that still doesn't constitute total freedom or liberty, because you might have to
belong or associate with a tribe, for example.
No, we're talking about in Alaska.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Now, let me tell you something else, too. Now, there has been incidents of people who do move back. But you know where the problem comes in? If you come back in too great of numbers, then the locals start feeling intimidated. That's why in certain African tribes, like the Dahomey is one king. In the Ashanti too. If his slave population started getting too big, they start killing some of them off. They'd kill some off to prevent uprising and all that stuff. Then, too, when some slaves was free, see, like I told you yesterday, there's many different categories of slaves. In some cases, when the owner said, well, y'all, you can go, they said, no, we'll stay here. They didn't want to go. And here in the United States, the word slave is looked at in out of context the way it is the rest of the world. Now, I guess it applies here, but if you see, like if you and Robin was over there walking in some area, they go some slaves. Not that you are, but they don't know your name.
Yeah.
And then if you break somebody's stuff and got the money, you take a child and say, hey, you can keep my child so I can pay your stuff off. That's a pawn.
Hmm. Wow.
Well, ladies and gentlemen,
that's what it is.
We're going to round it up for today, Friday. We'll be back Monday.
Okay,
Monday next week, we're going to do White Slave. Okay, everyone have a good weekend.